This is Xformation, brought to you by the Center for Growth and Opportunity at Utah State University. I'm Will, and today I am joined by my colleague, as always, Caden Rosenbaum. Today we're talking... What?
Hey-o!
I thought you were coming at me hot today.
No, if I can get through an episode without doing A-O, I failed.
Yeah, no. So today we're talking about dark patterns. But first, I want to talk about some new tea I got.
I want to hear about this new tea because currently I'm drinking mint tea.
I don't like mint tea at all. I really don't
like mint tea.
No, it doesn't. I like rose tea. I mean, that's like
rose tea.
Rose tea is great. Dried roses.
You know, my name is German for rose tree.
Oh, rose bush. The roses are starting to bloom. They're quite gorgeous out. Yeah. No. So this new tea, the pu'er tea. You ever heard of pu'er tea?
It reminds me of, potpourri.
Potpourri. Like, it is kind of potpourri-ish, right?
You know, the scent stuff that you spray in your bathroom.
Yes, but...
So you're drinking it in a tea.
Yeah, so it's better than that. Let me tell you, it's definitely better than that. No, so this tea is fermented. It's a fermented tea. And it's the stuff that oftentimes... I'm pretty convinced that when you go to a dim sum restaurant, like a nice Chinese restaurant... that you're getting mm-hmm. this type of tea, right? It's like, it's the stuff, it's like the super hot stuff that you get. I've always wondered what that is because it's some sort of like black tea, but there's like some sort of like umami flavor there, right?
Yeah, it's very hot.
It's very hot.
You kind of don't want to drink it, but it tastes amazing.
Yeah, exactly. It's like kind of like a reddish color, right? Yeah. That stuff I'm pretty sure is pu'er tea. So I had it because one of our colleagues, because Bob suggested it. Right. And I'm like, you know what? I'll try out this tea. I love funky teas, right? I really like this, like, a smoky tea known as Lapsang Souchong. Anyway, I'm very happy about this tea. It's the little things in life that make it all worth it. Right.
Well, you know, I'm growing chamomile, just for tea, and I've got some lavender. On the other side, I've got dill and oregano. And I'm just waiting for them to come in because A, I want the tea. I want the chamomile and the lavender tea. But then B, I like to season my steaks with dill and oregano.
Yeah.
And I let them sit overnight with just stems of that. And it soaks into the steak overnight. Oh. So then even if you take them off during the cooking process, you still get that nice taste that comes through the steak.
Huh. Look at that. You learn something new every day.
Pro tip, watch Alton Brown do the reverse sear method.
I love
and
Alton
it'll change
Brown.
Your life.
I really, really, really love Alton Brown. But yeah, let's talk about dark patterns today. Let's start off why are we even talking about this, right?
Well, first off, we're talking about it because the FTC brought it up. Yeah. Let's be honest here. That's why we're talking about it.
Yeah, we're very driven by the policy cycle, right? Unfortunately. we didn't determine that this thing is important, but they did.
they definitely did. Yes. And it's built off of a lot of academic work, a lot of research by people thinking very hard about user design or user interface design and how it actually influences people. But I think that today we're going to say some very unpopular things about all of that work and all of their opinions about dark patterns.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously we're putting out a paper on this, you know, for the listeners, Caden and myself, we've been writing on this. We wrote a paper. We will have written a paper by the time this comes out. And we're doing more research in this area, but I'm really fascinated by this concept of dark patterns, right? This, you know, as you said, it's like this million-dollar question. No, it's this question of what is a dark pattern? That's the fundamental thing that I don't know. I've been struck by how broad the term is and how broadly it's used.
And just the fact that it gives you pause should give everyone else pause, because I'm sure that anyone listening to this that has a hand in dark patterns is just saying, well, dummy, I mean, it's pretty simple. It's anything that tricks a user. Don't you understand why it's so easy to define these?
Yes.
And what we're saying is that it's not easy to define these things because it can get hyperbolic real fast.
Yes, I think it can get hyperbolic really, really quickly. There's one definition that basically said, what was that one definition that like cute animals was considered a dark pattern? It's like robot cuteness was itself a dark pattern. So I don't know. I mean,
giving us puppy eyes and that's a dark pattern.
Exactly. That's a dark pattern.
Like behind those puppy eyes is a dark, insidious force.
But there is this really interesting line that we're trying to talk through here about persuasion, right? We're trying to figure out the difference between things that are just trying to persuade you to buy or persuade you to believe an opinion or persuade you to do something, right? Persuade you to conduct some sort of behavior or do some sort of action. As compared to something that may be a little bit more insidious, I think. And that to me is what dark patterns are trying to get at, is this kind of more insidious nature. This more, you know, I don't know. I don't know that we have like a perfect definition. I mean, we're still working on a definition of dark patterns, but more fundamentally, like I think that what we're trying to understand with dark patterns is, well, let me say it like this.
Okay.
I think that what we're trying to do, at least what I was trying to spur us both to think about, is starting from a different position, which is that there are already things that are illegal out there. There are already things that are fraudulent, that are deceptive, that would be included under basically any standard, any policing action that the FTC or other state agencies could bring. And it's like, well, what distinguishes the things that are already illegal, right, from dark patterns? Are they basically the same thing? And I think that for the most part, I'm sorry. Yeah. No, go ahead.
So the really interesting thing about dark patterns that is almost always explained in the academia and then sort of glossed over so that they can continue to talk about dark patterns is the fact that most dark patterns that are being discussed are already illegal. They're already something that the FTC can enforce. Just because they're online doesn't make them any different. One of the great examples is an internet contract to get a loan, right? Mm-hmm. And there's this internet contract to get a loan to use it specifically for buying a mattress. This is an actual real case. And the problematic part of that was that once she had the loan, this person who got a loan to go buy a mattress, she found out at the mattress store that the loan wasn't applicable to the mattress store that she was trying to buy the mattress from. And then she had to go get a loan from somewhere else. And at this point, she starts to suspect that something is up. She spent $300 just to apply for this loan.
Yeah.
There are some issues there, right? But what isn't exactly explained, at least in the podcasts that I've been surveying today, is the fact that there's something called lending practices that are regulated, right? Just because they're online doesn't mean they're not regulated the same way a bank would be or the same way a credit card company would be. They're still regulated. And if there's something fraudulent going on, like making a loan, saying it's applicable everywhere, and then saying, oh, wait, it's not applicable everywhere, that's obviously deceptive, obviously unfair and fraud, and it's already regulatable. Right? The FTC can already go and investigate, already go and enforce it.
Yeah, no, totally.
But then there's these alleged dark patterns that aren't like that. They're changing the color of something so that it's more approvable.
Right.
So that it appeals to consumers better. And that's where things get kind of fishy, kind of hyperbolic, and it's still marked as the same insidious nature as the contract scheme.
Yes.
That's what gets me rolling on this. Kind of wary of the whole dark pattern concept in general.
Exactly. Right. Such that, and to kind of, again, blow the issue up in its broadest terms, we have what I think, at least, and I think that you probably agree with me on this one as well, is that you have this concept of the dark patterns includes both very actionable items that warrant action, like the loan, right, as well as more nuanced things that really don't probably warrant any sort of action. So, for example, what's included in a lot of definitions of dark patterns are, again, those things that you're talking about, the loan changes, that sort of fraud or that sort of deception, rather. And then you also include, or people tend to include, things like, well, switching the default from yes collection to no collection, right? Or
right.
Or
like for data. Or, for data.
Yeah, right. Exactly. This you know, what is it? What's it called?
It's called privacy Zuckering.
Yeah.
It's really a reference to what the FTC was investigating and brought enforcement action against Facebook for. And which isn't necessarily illegal, because what they did was they settled it instead of going to court with the FTC, which is notoriously good at winning cases,
right?
But it's still got a term of its own, privacy Zuckering, saying we'll protect your data and then letting third parties use the data to alter their apps to make them more appealable.
But that, I think, is a little bit different though than what, so this is what's interesting even about like privacy Zuckering, is that people define it in the way that you talked about, right? The way that mm-hmm. you're giving information to some other platform without necessarily telling them, and just collecting information writ large. So there's right. people who say just that the action of saying that you are giving somebody like, you know, Facebook or Zuckerberg the ability to collect your information, that in itself is a problem, which to me, again, right. there's not to say that there might not be issues with private information to be shared, but it just seems to be there needs to be a hook, right? Like all of this seems to just not have necessarily a hook in anything that's right. that is like that warrants action, right?
Well, what's to distinguish a common sales technique like saying, I'll give you $5,000 off if you buy the car in cash versus something like putting a timer on how quickly someone can empty their cart by paying for the item in the cart?
Yeah.
Or even just the we have 5 items left in stock kind of a quote unquote gimmick that has been described as a dark pattern. What's to distinguish that from just getting a good deal from a salesman at a car dealership? Right.
Which interestingly enough, car salesmen,
if we make all this stuff illegal, you grab the car salesmen too.
Yes. And what's interesting is car salesmen, and I'll put this little research in show notes, car salesmen actually can know individuals, or at least it's clear that they do know individuals who are more willing to pay for a car. There's actually really, yeah. really good evidence of this, that they're able to select individuals that they perceive as willing to pay more for a car, given their car payments, given their general, like they have information about the other individual, right? And they generally right,
based
know how
on
much
visual cues.
Yeah. Like it's an interesting sort of ability that even car salesmen do have. So mm-hmm. it clearly exists in the world, at least naturally in the world. We see this. There are some people, some salesmen and women and
persons. Yeah. We're going to call them salespersons.
Salespersons that are able to do well with sales. Yes. But at the same time, you know, then it moves online. And so the question of moving online is, you know, I think which we're hitting at here, right, is one, this more fundamental question of, you know, as we're saying, deception, fraud. And then two, this, you know, how impactful is it? All this right. is to say that whenever we talk about dark patterns, and the reason I'm even getting now a little bit animated on this is because, no, it's just it's one of these issues. It's one of these problems. And you see this endemic, especially within the public policy of innovation and mm-hmm. privacy and broadband and everything that's related to it, is that you whenever you start diving into an issue, it is related to a whole bunch of other related issues. And so if you're trying to attack the issue of, quote unquote, dark patterns, you're really talking about the academic discussion talks about a lot of different problems, but when we're talking about right. public policy, FTC enforcement actions, it's very, very, very narrow. So I think you
it should
did a good,
be at least.
Yes. Well, I'm in agreement with you on this. So you, yes. I know you put together basically what you consider would be a definition of dark patterns, right? So
right. Could well, you, what I did was I looked at the dark patterns that are being discussed, and the ones that yeah. are discussed as the most insidious are typically already covered, you know, by a deception standard, by an unfairness practice standard, mm-hmm. by fraud. And so I just took those two standards and that one legal definition of fraud, and I came up with a definition of its own. And I'll just read it, quote unquote, or just read the quote because it's going to be in comments. You can go find it probably by the time this is out.
Yeah, we'll put it in show notes.
I've defined it as any act or practice that, one, is designed to create a false impression or conceal material facts with the intention to mislead a consumer, two, a reasonable consumer is likely to be misled or is misled, and three, the dark pattern benefits a bad actor or group of bad actors to the detriment of a consumer, meaning it furthered the intended fraud and the bad actor obtained anything of value.
Yep.
I think that's got three components, right? It's the yes. intent to create a false impression.
Yeah.
Second thing is it is a reasonable consumer, which has its own little standard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the third one is it actually caused some harm. And if you keep it really narrow, limited to that definition, you're within the boundaries of accepted law, within the common law. And it keeps out salesmen who are or salespersons who are saying, if you act now, I'll give you this deal. And then later on, they find out they can't sell the product anyway and cut it 20%. Exactly. To everybody,
exactly.
Right?
Yes,
it keeps everything nice, narrow, concise, so that when you go to court against somebody, it's not just frivolous, and yeah. people don't realize you've over-enforced.
But that also, I think, makes a really important bifurcation between, you know, this problem, this clear problem, this illegal problem, this potentially illegal problem of dark patterns. And I think that generally it's like, why do we even need to give this thing the name of dark patterns unless we're just trying to describe something that's going online? But I think that when we're thinking about dark patterns, we should be very clear about distinguishing potentially illegal actions from other issues like just bad UX design or even nudges, right? Then that's the thing I had the primary issue with privacy Zuckering is that in some cases it's just about the default. Is the default yes collection or no collection? And in those instances, I don't see that as a necessarily a problematic issue that would be considered a dark pattern. Now, is it bad UX design? Yes, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Which
kind of gets to the point that you were trying to make earlier before I think I cut you off. It gets to the effect of the alleged dark pattern.
Yes.
Is there actually an impact on consumers? Meaning the third element of what my definition is. If a dark pattern isn't actually effective, why regulate it, right? Obviously, consumers understand that it is a problematic UX design. It's something they don't want. And if it's not actually impactful, then a reasonable consumer is not likely to be deceived by it, meaning the fraudster kind of failed, right?
Yeah.
Those are the dark patterns that I think are the most silly. For example, confirm shaming.
Yeah.
And it was tested actually in a sort of laboratory test done. The paper is called Shining a Light on Dark Patterns, and we'll post it in the show notes. But they tested types of dark patterns on people. The first was a group of 2,000. The second was a group of 4,000. And their confirmed shaming example was, yes, I'll take the loan that will, or yes, I'll take the privacy protection, or no, my credit is terrible anyway, right? No one sees that in the wild. It's sort of a hyperbolic way of getting a result.
Yes.
From people. Obviously, yeah. They're going to see that, be kind of annoyed by it. But the second thing is obviously they'll click yes, but you don't see that in the wild unless it's clearly deception, clearly fraud. Something is actually up there. That's not just a tactic to say yes, but hey, we're going to give you this thing. Are you sure you don't want to buy it? Like, it's good, which is a good faith, I guess, sales technique.
Yeah, no, totally, totally. But at the same time, what you're hinting at is just the likelihood of ever seeing something along these lines, right? That when you do actually do the narrowing feature, right? When you narrow down the issue of dark patterns to what is clearly actionable by the FTC and other similar agencies, that you're in just a more narrow discussion and a narrower set of cases of conduct. And that to me, when we talk about this issue of dark patterns, it seems that there is. I think that you'd suggested earlier that it is hyperbolic. And I think the reason why it's hyperbolic is because there's seeming evidence that that dark patterns are everywhere, right? That they exist. This problem exists everywhere, and it is
going. If you think they exist, you see them everywhere.
Yes, right? Exactly.
And there's also this problem in academia where you sort of want to coin your own term.
Yes,
which
I
is,
want to do it too.
I wouldn't say that Roach Motels is totally one of those examples, because obviously Roach Motels are annoying, but there are some other
are
terms
Roach
that
motels?
Have been
I mean,
coined.
I know what Roach Motels are, but what are Roach Motels?
Right. So a Roach Motel is based on... This is my favorite part about Roach Motels. It's based on the Eagles song Hotel California. You can check in anytime you like, but you can never leave.
Oh, really?
And so a Roach Motel is just, you'll get a subscription and it says free subscription. And then you have to give it all your credit card information. And then a month later, it starts charging you without telling you anything. You have to go through this whole process. Maybe you have to call someone. Maybe you have to go in person just to cancel your subscription. And none of that is really clear up front, and they call it a Roach Motel. You can check in really easily, but it's really hard to get back out.
Isn't this just seems like The Economist to me, right? This is just the subscription to The Economist, or basically.
Yeah, no. Yeah, well, all right. So The Economist is the one thing that I've subscribed to that I'm consistently like, I'm so glad I have this, right? Like, it is one of the few things that I pay for that I'm just really pretty pleased with, because the quality of reporting, the quality of papers they have are so much better than pick your source. I probably won't just rail against anybody today.
No.
The Economist.
I'm just saying
be messing with my The Economist.
Oh, I tried to get rid of The Economist years ago. I'm trying to say is that the Roach Motel. So by way of a small story, right? When I went to grad school, I tried to, thin the budget out a bit. And, you know, in going to grad school, I got rid of a whole whole bunch of subscriptions I had because I was going from like a full-time job to, you know, working or going to school full-time. And so I got rid of The Economist, which I love. I absolutely love The Economist, but it was getting rid of The Economist was very, very, very difficult. So, and, but that's the point, right? I mean,
well, it's the same with the Wall Street Journal. You have to call the Wall Street Journal and say, it's not charging me.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that you still see these sorts of, even the Roach Motel, right? Even the Roach Motel, the online Roach Motel is something that I've experienced elsewhere in a lot of cases, right? It's really, really, really difficult to not pay for those things in some cases. So,
and it's one of the most common examples that people bring up because it's the easiest to relate to.
Yep.
But the problem is that once you bring that up and people are bought or they're sold on this idea of dark patterns, you can sort of start to build out that idea and come up with another example or another one, like Apple sending you two extra chargers and then not charging you for it. And you start to talk about that.
Yeah.
And, whether you've bought an iPhone because you didn't like an Android, and it just sort of spirals. And when we talk about dark patterns, it has to be very specific because what people are advocating for is creating laws that would enforce against people doing business in good faith. And maybe they just have a bad UX design. And
yes.
If they're told about it, they'll fix it.
Yes. Yes. And but there's a lot of instances.
Entire law, like to build a law like some are proposing or to have regulatory enforcement that's way overbroad, impacts people that are just operating in good faith. They don't know that what they're doing is influencing people.
But so there is that case, right? So I think that there's a couple different levels that are going on here, right? You're right. Okay. I totally agree with you that you're right here. But there's that case, right? Which is that if we build this law too robustly, things will be included that should not obviously be included. So there is that problem, which I think is very, very, very clear. But I think more fundamentally, the problem that when we're talking about dark patterns is that there are things that are probably pro-consumer that are nudges that even would be included that themselves probably fail as a dark pattern, right? So Google does this all the time where they poke people and say, hey, you know, this certificate doesn't exist. And they still find problems in people selecting yes, I do, or no, yeah, I don't want to go to this website. So even like the pro nudges, you know, the pro consumer nudges themselves might be considered a dark pattern and have in some instances been considered, you know, an annoying, you know, annoying UX design that has a whole bunch of pop-ups. That's been another dark pattern in some definitions. But separate, what I would put from this is that I think that there's also this really interesting sort of economic understanding, or at least this belief that people and people online in particular are just trying to pressure you into either giving your information or, you know, giving out data in some manner or another, that they're just trying to pressure you, that there's nothing but pressure sales tactics because...
Right, that's the only incentive. Right?
Exactly, because that isn't incentive the only
incentive. To get you to give this away.
Exactly. There are multiple different kinds of incentives, right? So even the research that you cited about the conference shaming, that kind of stuff has been very narrowly focused on shopping websites. Shopping websites have a very clear kind of conversion funnel, right? You get towards some sort of product and you're at the end of the product cycle and you're either going to buy it or you're not going to buy it. Now, in other cases, the product really is the service itself. So in the case of, say, Facebook or Google, it's the ads and the content that you're able to access is actually the thing that you're integrating with, right? It's the thing that is trying to be optimized over time. And in those instances, I think there's just very different sorts of incentives. You don't want to show people or force people into bad decisions or try to make them make a decision or
try to manipulate them.
Yeah, you're not going to try to do that because you're trying to have long-term expected gains, right? You're like, you want to, the idea is to have, you know, lasting consumers of your product. So you want to give them at least some sort of benefit from the service, and you don't want to, you know, you don't want to fraud them. You don't want to deceive them. You don't want to do all the things that are horrible that are being included with dark patterns anyway. So in that instance, I think that at least some of the incentives, we have to at least think about what the major driving incentives are. And I think that my major driving incentives for all of this is generally pro-consumer. Now there could be issues. I'm not saying there aren't potentially problems, but in that instance, when you actually start breaking down the kinds of content you see and the research that you've seen so far, all this kind of stuff, you know, meshes out, right? That when you start seeing, okay, well, what I really truly care about are the most egregious actions, the illegal stuff, when you do that separation out, the likelihoods that really any single user is going to see a dark pattern is actually quite low. And we did a, we did a little calculation of this, which I was really.
You did a little calculation.
I mean, I'm excited because
I found it.
We both found this data on.
Oh, yeah. I'll take credit for that much.
Yes. Which you did. Yes.
You deserve the rest of the credit.
Well, but I'm interested in this because what I think needs to be done with this sort of analysis is breaking up dark patterns into their constituent parts. Right. If we make this distinction between good definitions of a dark pattern and bad definitions of a dark pattern, and then we take the current data that we know about dark patterns prevalence, and we basically separate out those two and make that delineation between, as we said, the dark patterns and then bad UX design, you see actually dark patterns not at all that likely. So at least, you know, some rough calculations on what I found is that the likelihood that any single user would experience a dark pattern is basically about on, it's on basically 4% of, or 0.4%, 0.4% of shopping sites. So,
well, why is that?
That
is because
it's just, it's not at all that common. Like you just, you're not going to experience pressure tactics all that often because it's just bad business.
And I mean, the big point that you made was that not only is it bad business, but the people who are typically selling to you are like Amazon or Walmart or eBay, right?
Yes.
And they have a brand to protect. And if they defraud their consumers, are they going to keep having consumers?
That is true. There's also this, like, so one thing, so talking about this distinction between the two, right? The between dark patterns and these kind of other nudges or just bad UX design. What I've always thought is odd is the timer, right? We haven't really talked about this. And I have kind of my own theory about why the timers, I mean, let's actually, let's take the case that when I imagine a timer existing, the one that really, 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 really bothers me, which is that the timer for a airline ticket, an airline ticket timer, when I buy an airline ticket timer, I know that those tickets are only held for a couple minutes anyway, right? That people are constantly booking in. Now, whether or not the timer actually induces an individual to be quicker about their decision-making process, who knows? That's something I'm sure there's probably data out there, but I'm kind of unclear on this. But I understand the reasons why there would be a timer. The reason why there's a timer is because there's a booking agent, right?
Right. And if you have a timer, that means they've set a specific rate, meaning the rate for everybody else is still varying. It's still going up or down.
Yes.
But your rate is locked in right there for the next 5 minutes or so while you book your ticket.
Yes.
And it's in order to keep you from getting gouged. Like they tell you the ticket is $300 up front. And then when you get to the end of the process, all of a sudden it is $600. That's what the timer is for, to keep that from happening. It stays $300 consistent until you check out. But does it induce you to buy the ticket? You're still going to Cancun.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
You're still going to Cancun. So where's the inducement?
Yeah. Where is the inducement? I don't know. So in those cases, I don't know.
But it sort of gets to the point that I'm trying to make here is that whenever really influential people talk about this, or whenever policy people or academics that express themselves as experts in dark patterns begin to go off on this tangent and they group in one after the other and they start to coin terms, it gets dangerous because these are the people that are being listened to whenever regulators are trying to find things that are wrong. And if they're only listening to these conversations, they're only expanding their definitions without actually thinking about whether they're good, whether they're actually effective dark patterns, you get a lot of overbroad legislation, and it takes a really long time for the courts to kind of separate that out and say, hey, that's overbroad. And it takes someone going to court. It takes money, takes time, and it maybe is a little bit overbroad and hurts consumers in the end.
What do you think should be done instead, right? Is there anything that the FTC needs to do?
Now, I do like the fact the FTC is doing the workshop. Don't get me wrong, right? I think it's important for them to understand that there are things on the internet that are like this, and it's important to study them.
Yes.
But as far as creating a new legal standard, not so much. I think we have all the legal standards we need, but it's just helpful for the FTC to get data on some of these. I want to call them something else, but for now, we'll just call them alleged dark patterns.
Yeah.
I want to say online fraud, online deception, online unfairness.
Yes. Yes. Which is what they are, right?
Yes.
And that's why I've been hesitant this entire time in using these terms and, you know, doing scare quotes.
I'm using quotes.
Yeah, exactly.
Quote, unquote. I'm saying alleged.
Yeah, exactly. Allegedly, right?
And that's the kind of timid, objective, non-inflammatory conversation that needs to be had by people in this research area, not, oh, the Roach Motel, look at these things, or confirm shaming, or, you know, privacy Zuckering, you know, putting a bad guy face on it. It's hyperbolic. Let's be serious policy people. That's what I'll say about that.
I think that's probably where we should end for now.
I think that's a wrap.
Yep. Be well.
Be well. Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.